Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and you are listening to This Life
with Bob Forrest
and Dr. Drew.
Here we are.
Ladies and gentlemen, gather around the iPhone again. Here we are. We're back.
We're now back. We have a very special guest, Christina P. Christina, welcome.
Oh, I'm so excited to be here. I'm such huge fans of you guys. Oh,
my God. I told you I'm a fan of yours, so
I'm
this is good.
And
I'm freaking out a little bit, too.
In the green room, we decided we're going to revitalize sex rehab and have it be abusers, sexual abusers with Dr. Drew.
Hey, speaking of the rehab shows, did you hear Busey on Stern? He was fantastic. He was so great.
Stem cells. No. That's what I heard.
All right.
No, stem cells.
I missed that.
They can replace anything.
Bob.
He was one of the greats.
He was still Gary.
Okay.
Christina P. has Netflix special, Mother Inferior. I recommend it in the strongest terms. Susan and I, my wife, were watching it, and I was like, we got to get her for the podcast.
Aww.
I need to talk to her. And what did I – do you remember what else I said? No. So
she's texting, guys.
No, I said – I'll tell you in a little bit. What's that? I'm not going to show my hand just yet.
Okay.
Follow Christina at Christina P, C-H-R-I-S-T-I-N-A. Christina P online.com is where you can find her. Also, the podcast, Your Mom's House Podcast, and that's Deep Bro Podcast.
Yes.
Yeah. She, of course, married to Tom Segura and co-host and father of a son, Ellis.
Yes.
One two-year-old, or is there more coming?
Just one for now, but I want to do more.
How many?
Should I? I want one more.
Two, good.
Right? Don't you guys have two?
We have triplets. I know, it's insane.
Horrible.
But they're horrible. look at the hair color. That happened the first year. Also, this week's courtesy of Hydrolite, our friends at Hydrolite. Don't forget those guys over on Facebook. We love that product.
I use it all the time now.
I do, too. And a shout-out to The Last House Sober Living. We interviewed those guys recently.
Yeah, it was
good. They were excellent. We got a lot to get into. I've got a bunch of Twitter hate going, which is awesome. We got to talk about my friend Leanne Tweeden, and all the mishigas around her today. Also, I did a special with Elizabeth Smart where I interviewed her for a couple hours with her dad. It was up Monday, I believe. That's right. And very interesting
talk. But you have to watch the first episode of and then you do the interview the second week. Right.
I think what it is something like it's the night before they run the two parts, then they run them again Monday, and then my thing, and then again they run them or something. But it's worth spending time with because it is a breathtaking story, and she is a delightful, poised woman who has survived this. And I just had to know how and why and what that was like. Just incredible.
And now she's talking about it, which is even better.
Like
I've been
crazy.
Waiting for that.
Oh, have you been waiting for this
one? It was a fantastic, not fantastic, good, but just an amazing story.
So, Christina, what I said was, first of all, I love the comedy special.
Oh, thank
you so much. Because you didn't take any crap from, you know, you were pulling the gloves off a bit. And you weren't being PC, which I found refreshing in this age when everyone's walking on eggshells. You just said, screw it.
Yeah, I think there's a being offended culture that's happening, and it's happening for the sake of being offended.
Yes.
Rather than – we should be offended at actual things. Like everyone's upset about this sexual predator and that one. Don't forget we have one in the White House too. Like there's stuff that we're not really looking –
we're glossing over.
Yeah.
Let's
get offended at some real stuff, not what so-and-so said on Twitter today, what Justin Bieber was tweeting, you know.
I am offended.
What did he tweet?
She's just making something up.
Well, you know, because people are outraged.
I want to be outraged at Justin Bieber.
Yeah, it's
if
outrage.
He does that girl wrong a second time, I will come after him.
Well, that too, and like the PC culture on college campuses. I narrated a documentary called Can We Take a Joke about how that dialogue has been shut down on college campuses now. You can't even
talk
about
it. All dialogue has been shut down.
Right, and that's really dangerous. So it's not just the comedians, it's colleges too.
Do you go out in colleges now?
Hell no.
Yeah,
it's
too dangerous.
Well, they tell you don't talk about sex, drugs, fucking, and this and that. I can curse, right?
Facebook gets a little
sorry. Yeah, okay.
You can say it on the podcast, but Facebook doesn't.
Sorry,
take
it. But what else are those kids doing? They're effing and they're, you know, drinking and screwing.
And who says you can't talk about it? The administration?
Yes. When they hire you, they give you guidelines. Same with the military, which is like, what else am I going to talk about? Recipes for Apple Brown Betty? Like, these guys are out in the
S. Nowhere.
Doing their thing.
So the other thing, I was watching your Netflix special and I went, oh, wait a minute, this woman is super smart. Super smart. And then she said, I'm Hungarian. I went, aha! Because every Hungarian I know is insanely bright.
Is there a little bit of gypsy in you too?
Don't you dare! That is huge insult.
She's the real, really for real Hungarian.
Yeah, both my parents were immigrants.
Yeah,
they escaped.
They're only true photographic memories I've seen are in Hungarians. Anybody in your family have that?
No, a lot of alcoholic.
Well, there's a lot of alcohol too. So there's that also. And then,
well, that's America.
No, it's Hungarian. It's that sort of Czech Hungarian. Yes. There's a lot of Bavarian stuff.
Yes.
And the other thing is math, like crazy science minds, math minds. Yes. Are crazy. And you studied at Oxford for a while.
Well, yeah, I did. So lame. Medieval and Renaissance studies. So it was like, I mean, it's so useless.
But why? What got you there?
Were
you like a Catholic?
No, I was not good at the real world. I didn't like the real world.
Where did you go to
high
school?
All girls Catholic school in the Valley. I got kicked out of public school. I just decided to not go anymore because I was getting into fights because I was a goth girl and they were bussing in kids, excuse me, from South Central, and I was getting into fights like on the daily.
So perfect place to send the goth chick is to a Catholic school.
Yeah, it was, but I loved it.
There is some sense in that.
I guess so.
There's a lot of rosaries involved in the goth movement.
Yeah, I love the structure because at home there was no structure, so it was like this wonderful.
If you take the white thing the nuns wear around their heads, it is kind of goth. If you take that away, make it black.
Like Sister Bertrill's thing? What are you talking about?
Yeah.
You never went to Catholic school,
no,
Drew.
No, I did not.
You didn't.
I did my whole life. God bless them.
Yeah, I liked it, but I don't like the real world. I didn't like it, and I thought philosophy. Also, I came from a lot of BS in my family history, so I think it was really a way for me of figuring out the world with studying philosophy.
And so you went straight from high school to Oxford?
No. I went to a university in San Francisco, and then I did a year abroad.
I see.
So it was like a year program.
What university in San Francisco?
University of San Francisco.
Yeah. And do you retain any of St. Thomas Aquinas or St. Augustine or whoever? What were the parameters of philosophy? From whom to whom? From Maimonides to?
Oh, that's terrible. No. I don't even know that one. No, I mean, I remember St. Augustine said we're born in between urine and feces. That was his big thing, and I thought, well, it's such an interest, and that's the premise for the Catholic Church. Is that that? Well, that's true. He's the father of that church, of that thinking, that we are inherently sinful and inherently bad. And you go, well,
and
wow,
dirty,
no wonder
dirty.
We're so screwy. Yeah.
Soiled.
That's right. Yeah. That's right, Bob.
Well, we are born sometimes not between, but right amongst urine and feces. Like, typically, rather, urine and feces. Feces are right with us
when we're
born.
I just was fully aware of I have two young children, right? But I have an older son, right? But I was high when the older son was born, so I don't really remember all the stuff that goes on.
Sure.
Then when Elvis was born, I was like, holy hell,
yeah.
Right? And I always tell this story. We went to natural childbirthings there Flint, in La Cañada, Flint Ridge, every Sunday, right? They don't tell you about the heads being small, being stretching.
Yeah, yeah.
So I looked down in the little plastic thing, and I'm supposed to cut the umbilical cord, and the head was like a Martian. I was like, shit. And then this thing came over me. It's going to be okay. I'll love him anyway. You know what I mean? And the nurse, who was sharp, picked up like, oh, that honey, the heads are like that. Because I kept touching the head. Like, aww. Oh, my God, he's got a cone.
He's got a cone.
They should really tell that stuff in birthing classes.
Yeah. Well, I didn't even take a class. And they told me I was going to have a C-section. I went into labor not knowing what was going to happen. And I just got high. They give you lots of drugs.
I say they should leave the dads the hell out of the birthing room, Bob. Oh. That's the bottom line.
That's, I think I might go back to the cigar thing.
Uh-huh. You and Fred McMurray. Ricky,
I always remember Ricky Arnett.
Ricky Ricardo.
Know, Ricky Jr. was born.
Well, they used to put women out.
Yeah,
it's in my act as a joke, but you know, give me the 1950s birth. But why did they stop doing that?
Why'd they stop doing that, Drew?
Because they have a spinal. They can make it so it doesn't hurt with spinal anesthesia.
I want to be totally out.
Well, you can be. They'll work it for you. Yeah, no problem.
I asked. She wouldn't do it. My doctor wouldn't do it.
Well, it certainly adds risk because you don't breathe as well and stuff like that.
Oh, so, that whole thing.
I know you need to breathe.
Oh,
so did it affect your existential philosophy when you had a child to look after? It does, doesn't it?
I'll tell you what. I was way more spiritual before I had a kid.
Before?
I was
more
actually,
practical now.
Yeah. Now I'm like, there's nothing going on. I just got to protect my young and got to make sure this guy goes to college and, you know, doesn't get
someone became
pregnant.
Like some sort of female jaguar or something.
Yeah. I'm a wolf. Wow. Yeah, protecting my young, man. That's my duty.
Now, you used to be a fan, or you still, I guess, are a fan of Celebrity Rehab and stuff, Bob and I did. So you had questions for us, you said.
Let's talk about it all day.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I asked you about specific characters. Characters, I mean,
they're humans.
Human patients of ours, you mean, we were deeply concerned about for many years.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I like
some
the,
of which have passed.
Yes.
I know. I miss Jeff Conway.
Oh, you have no idea.
He was the greatest.
You have
he
no
was
idea.
One of our favorite people on the show.
He's a Valley guy. He was a Valley guy.
And he suffered so much on that. On your guys' show.
I'll tell you a little wrinkle that happened off camera, because we struggled with him for a long – we kept struggling with poor Jeff. And
his abuse in childhood
was ritualistic.
Is 10 on a 10 scale.
Because you guys didn't all – I wanted you to get deeper on
We got into it. They don't show it to
that's
you.
That's what I'm saying. I wanted to
I wanted
to
it too. He was – in his initial abuse is he was sort of kidnapped.
He was in child porn.
Yeah, he was kidnapped by a – Catholic magazine salesman at the door who took him away for a photograph shoot, and he ended up in child porn. And then he became this object of horrific physical abuse by the neighbor kids. They put him in a bag and hit him with rocks and lay him on the railroad tracks. And it was like Penelope Pit Stop. I mean, it's like ridiculous.
That's
like
not ritual. His mom was not a jaguar.
Right. I'm protecting mine. Yeah. Eyes
don't let,
on.
Don't let that happen.
No. Are you kidding me? No way. I'm putting him in karate first thing.
But Jeff was
he was the OG, you know. Yeah. He was really – he Soup. Seemed very troubled. And so why wouldn't they let you get deeper on
we
the
did. They, whatever we did, we
I
did
mean,
it.
Showing it rather than
I have
than
no
network.
Idea. Yeah. I have no idea. We didn't get involved in the editing or anything. We just did our work, and we treated it the way we treat people, and they cut it up the way they cut it up.
Yeah, because I wanted to see more. I wish the show was like 2 hours.
There's too much sailing on it. Let's go to the beach.
Yeah, they
want to
do activities.
Isn't that the worst? Like, I could just sit here and listen to you guys talk. That's what I want, is get into the trauma.
I always said we should have done it. We didn't have this option really back in the day, but if we could just shown the groups real time online.
That's what I want.
The groups were amazing.
I'll give you a behind-the-scenes you'll like, right? Yeah. So you know how shows are and they have the next day's shooting schedule?
Yes.
Drew would look at it and it would say, like, snowboarding. And he'd be like, oh, my fucking God!
I'd be like, no! No!
His head would explode.
And it got to the point where I said, we're not doing this anymore unless nobody gets near the patients. And nobody makes eye contact with me. Nobody in the production team can make eye contact or talk to me. And they certainly can't talk to the patients. They can ask me 4 questions. Yeah. Doctor, how's the patient doing? What's this going to cost? What's the aftercare plan? And what's the family therapy going to be? That's it. Yeah. One more question. I'm walking off this set. I swear to Christ. Because it became waterboarding.
It was crazy. Over the years, they just had to do more and more crazy.
But they didn't. They didn't. Did not, the right. show was inherently interesting because you wanted them to succeed. So let's talk about my favorite night is always the first night.
Okay, so hold on. If we do that,
I'll tell you inside of my body.
That was a hard day for me. Just, you know, admitting. Normally in treatment, you admit like 2 or 3 people at a time. It's a rolling admission. Uh-huh. There's people that have been there for a while and help you enroll patients. Taking 8 or 10 people and enrolling them all at once on one day is brutal.
Why is that?
Why do they do that?
No. Why is it? What's so brutal about it? It's just because the
I have involvement. I have to get to know them. It takes hours to assess each one of them. I have to get to know them.
Just bed placement, for instance.
Well,
That I didn't want. You got to know who you're putting people in with, and this way it's just en masse. Like you probably like the season with. What's Jason Davis and Janice Dickinson,
yeah,
right?
Love Janice.
You can see there was war beginning on hour 2.
Yes. Well, Janice is her personality is very big, too. She's
well, but he's still admitting people, and the unit's not up and running yet, and they're going to war.
I have to evaluate them for like an hour or two and figure out what's going on, make an assessment, make a plan, start doing their detoxes and stuff, and then see them into the night through the withdrawal. And it's not easy. But let me tell you a quick thing about Bob and Jeff Conway. So this is something you didn't see on TV. So we were struggling with him. You know, we struggled with him forever. And all of a sudden, Bob goes, yeah, I remember back at Jerry's Deli when Jeff used to 12-step me. I'm like, what are you talking
about? He
used
to try to get me
sober. I go,
what
are you talking about, Jeff 12-stepping? I go, what? You had Jeff was sober in the program trying to get you sober one day? Why did you tell me that when we first met him, which had been years before?
It was years before.
But you're upset because that would have meant that he had a rapport and
it just was such a piece of that relationship that I didn't know about it. And it's big. And I could have used that to go, Jeff, dude,
see what,
remember what that was like. You know,
so
look
was,
at him now.
I was friends with him And what happened was he never really took to the 12 steps. Immediately after about 2 years of sobriety, he started getting into the Bible a lot, and he would bring his Bible to 12-step meetings. And that's going to alienate you from 90% from of the crowd, right? But he, I don't know, he just was so nice to me and kept encouraging me. He was so tolerant of my relapsing, unlike a lot of people.
I mean,
just think
about now how that relationship had shifted, and I didn't know anything about that background. That was, like, stunning to me. So anyway, what was your other question?
What about day one? I love day one because it was like, how are these people going to sneak in their drugs of choice?
Oh, always, always,
it was the funnest to find like how you guys would find the contraband and all that stuff. So what's the most creative thing you've ever seen?
Ever seen?
Oh,
come on now.
How about, do we have to get graphic? I know.
Please, please. This is what I want.
How about a syringe put inside a condom, greased and put up inside an anus? Can we say that on Facebook Live?
Rectum.
Wow. How about that?
That's a good one.
Why would you do that? This is a hospital. You could find one of those anywhere.
It was empty. It was an empty
To me, the more amazing thing, they're out of their mind. They're doing whatever. Yeah. And they're afraid of detoxing. I get what addicts do. Sizemore, by the way, was pretty good, too.
He was fantastic.
We had balloons all over the place. We kept finding them for days.
And he kept saying he's not on heroin.
Yeah, I know. We kept finding heroin in his trash can.
He's on meth. And he's like, and he's asleep for 62 hours.
Right.
Well, that was the math, to be fair. Wow. But, and I'm worrying about Tom again.
So talented, too.
Oh, and what the greatest
guy
talented.
Ever. I say Tom Sizemore is too talented.
Yes.
Because when you're trying to deal with him, he's acting. Right. He can't separate. The acting doesn't stop. No, pretty much he doesn't know that there's a real him anymore.
Well, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Because it was hard to watch him in films after having seen him on Celebrity Rehab because you're like, well, that guy's on. No, man. Like, I would have no idea.
He's intense. But back to the contraband and stuff, the stuff that always astonished me was the family who was demanding and worried and look at what they're going through and we got to get them through this, would show up with the syringes up their butts or something too. they would be as bad. They'd be worse than the addict sometimes.
Well, because isn't that the whole codependent cycle?
Yeah, but the degree of it is so – when you really see it and you're talking to somebody and you think they're in a certain place and then you see how they behave, you can't believe it sometimes.
Wow.
It's amazing.
How do you deal with the families that – because they have to get in treatment too.
Yes, they do.
But do they?
We used to insist on it.
Yeah.
And you gotta
where they participate is a whole other matter. I mean, there's in treatment and then there's in treatment, right?
Yes.
And that was always hard with family. And I had many unpleasant encounters with family screaming at me that it's not their problem.
Yeah.
That why you're talking to me, I'm not the sick one.
Yeah.
Well.
Yeah, that's got to – do you ever
Here's
get frustrated?
Here's a new thing. Here's
ever
a new
get
thing.
Frustrated.
So I deal with it now daily. It's gotten way worse, right? You can imagine we're talking about in the early 2000s, mid-2000s. Now, 2017 is crazy. The moms and dads and the best friends and their – you know, and they're advocates for their children. They're the ones that got the principal fired when the kid acted out, right?
And
you can imagine what parents are like nowadays. And it's just, you know, it's you get yourself into these confrontations with them. So I came up with this funny way of doing it. When is an adult? Tell me at what age now. Because when I was growing up, it was 18. Your son is 28.
It's 27. It's
27. Yeah, your brain is
27
an
or 28.
Yeah.
So parents are going to advocate for their 27 and 28-year-olds just like they did when they were in first grade and second grade and third grade.
Right?
It's madness.
Right, but they can't. You can't. 18 is the age.
Oh, Miss Jaguar, wait to see what happens here. We'll see how that goes.
I know.
I don't know. I'm Catholic, and anytime my kids get in trouble, I'm assuming like, yeah, for sure it was them. For sure. You know what I mean?
Well, that's a better.
But parents nowadays, he would never do that.
I'm bracing myself for the mom culture. Because I see it like I do these mommy and me classes.
Readopt your goth stuff again and get the whole goth deal on.
Well, I was in a Mommy and Me class, and a woman was breastfeeding her 3-year-old. Mm. I'm sorry, 152-week-old, whatever. And I was like, "Are you really? Is this the norm now? Like, we're just gonna?" Because I know I can't coddle him forever. But then I get afraid because I had so much tough love, the Eastern Bloc stuff. I don't want to do that.
You want to be sure that you don't compensate. Yeah. Whenever you're reacting to what your parents did, whether it's the same or the opposite, it's not good for the kids.
Right.
Or you can pray, since you're goth.
Yeah.
Pray to God, see the Catholic wisdom in your parents' way of doing things.
Pray to see you.
Because
the wisdom.
I don't know about that. That's what I did. And the fact is, my dad loved me. He never told me he loved me.
Yeah.
Not once. It never came out of his mouth. But he expressed it in the ways that he could express love. Right. If we're going to still be angry at our parents and go the other way,
that's just called
forgiveness.
Yeah. You can't have wholeness.
Yeah.
Well, but that's why we overparent.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
You know what I mean?
Believe me, I know.
Oh, that's interesting. So it's a generation of like Gen Xers who grew up with no parents. They're overcompensating because it's really the
baby boomers that didn't get. They really didn't get.
Boomers got it the worst.
Yeah.
The generation that raised the boomers was very stoic.
Yes.
Great generation.
The greatest generation.
That was the greatest generation. Yes. They weren't the most loving.
No. Yeah. No.
They weren't the most nurturing.
No, they were serial killers. That's what I say in my act, that they're raised like serial killers. Don't cry. Suck it up. Come on. You know. And of course.
You know what? Mm-hmm. I don't even think my dad was told don't cry. There was no one to cry to.
Oh,
you know, when you have 8 brothers and 2 sisters in a 3-bedroom shack. Yikes. In the freezing cold of Minnesota, I don't think there was anybody to cry to.
Yeah, there was a lot of just focus on survival for that
There
generation.
Really was.
And therefore, what are you going to do for the group that has everything except shame them for having everything and not having to struggle to survive?
So watch his approach.
A lot of that.
But look at your parents, probably similar. My dad was, I'm going to be successful in life and give my children every opportunity that was not given to me.
Yeah.
But he forgot the love and nurture.
Right. Right.
Yeah,
so it fell a little short. So 2 of his kids are drug addicts. 2 out of 4.
Christina was very interested in the abuse that I suffered. Go ahead.
I want to hear it all because I feel like I never got to hear. So tell me.
But you get it that trauma plus exposure, use in the face of adverse consequences creates addiction.
Absolutely. And I learned that by watching Celebrity Rehab.
There you go.
It was around the same time I got my ass into therapy.
Good.
I didn't have a problem with addiction, but a lot of trauma in my past or whatever, it's so great. That's why I think it's such a great service what you guys do.
Well, thank you.
But let's talk about your trauma.
Go ahead.
Drew, go into it.
Please.
Okay, parents. What's their background? Let's go.
My dad was a Depression era, first generation, lived in Chicago. They lost everything in the Depression.
Russian Jew.
Extremely, extremely traumatized. They were traumatized by the pogroms or whatever they were running away from. They could never tell us. It was too bad. They weren't sure. Actually, all we could get was that they didn't know who the bad guys were. They just know people kept running over their town.
Bolsheviks.
Yeah, it was the Bolsheviks or it was my grandma called them the banditos because they were just these bandits would come through and they'd wreck everything. And we don't know who that was, really. It was just one.
Wreck is a nice word for what they did, Drew. They raped and pillaged.
Okay. So they came here, which, by the way.
Okay, Rob. We got it. I love it.
So they came here, but.
He always has to go darker on it, but it's so great.
They have to, they had to have sponsors. They had to pay to get here. They had to prove how they were going to make a living. I mean, this business about open borders is like, wait a minute. That's, so we've never been that way.
They were poor.
And they came and they set up a delicatessen. They lost everything and my grandfather ended up being a grocer. But because of all that trauma, my dad, who was a family practitioner and was a good doctor, traumatized the shit out of me financially. Like, if I needed a pair of shoes, Well, first the story. We didn't have shoes. We walked through the snow in Chicago. You don't understand.
Yeah.
And get the shoes. But then next week, come wait for me at the poorhouse. I'll be in the poorhouse. It's fine. It won't kill me. I'll be in the poorhouse. And you'll be all right. You walk by with your new shoes and you say hi to me. And I was two. I had this whole poorhouse in my head my whole life. So that was his contribution.
But that lends itself to the poverty consciousness growing up, right? So I'm sure once you got some success.
No, it's all so the disaster around the corner. I still feel tomorrow. Oh, that's the Hungarian thing.
Me too. Yeah. Let's get into it, man. When's that other shoe going to drop?
Everything's
too good right now.
It's the catastrophe is coming.
Yeah.
Catastrophe is coming.
Hide under the bed.
Bury the coins in the backyard.
Yeah. man, totally.
We're still digging them up.
Yeah. It's true. It's true.
Yeah. So that's dad.
Yeah, that's dad. And my mom was an opera singer who ended up fronting like bands and things and ended up being a singer. Being a film noir actress. She was in like all those film noir things and stuff. And so my whole life I had this feeling that was I adopted or what did I do wrong? This kind of weird feeling.
Yes.
Okay, so.
You have I'm, that.
Me too.
Okay, well, wait. Maybe
like
I'm
a, Harry Potter.
Wait, well, here's the
take
story.
Take me to Hogwarts.
So I am on Loveline about 10 years ago one night, maybe 15 years ago. A friend of mine's in there and he's a film noir freak. So he went to look up my mom on the internet. She goes, oh, here's your mom on the internet. And he starts reading this thing and he goes, oh, Lynn Satin. She came, you know, there she is.
Oh, wow.
She's the fifth wife of silent film star Harlan something. I'm like, what? Turned out at 18, some 56-year-old silent film star picked her up and took her out here, married him for 10 years, had a stepson.
That's why he's so pretty.
Knew nothing about
any of this. And it's in Wikipedia?
It's in her Wikipedia. It's in her Wikipedia. Knew nothing about any of it. I thought.
You were like 45.
And you were 45 when you found that?
Yeah. 45, 50 in that range, somewhere
live
there.
Live on the radio.
And my sister flipped out. I went, look, she's made it till she's 80 with this secret. Let's let her.
Yeah,
what are we going
to
accomplish?
She took it to her grave.
But I called her stepson. Carole and I were in Santa Barbara doing an appearance, and this woman came up to me and said, I need to do an amends to you. I go, about what? I go, my father. And I was like, who's your father? Well, and she told the whole story. She's the stepson of this guy, this maniac who was picking up 18-year-olds at the age of 60 and taking them to California. And I called him. He's a retired dentist in Stockton. This guy. And she had a stepson for years. And then one day talking about Don Draper, man. She just left. Boom, gone. And he's so funny. The guy was very nice.
Did you stay in touch?
I've emailed him once in a while. I kept trying to get my sister to call him because I think it was interesting. But he goes, yeah. He goes, they lived over in the over by the tar pits, kind of that area, and they'd have a party every Sunday night. Now my mother always talked about the people that was around her, Carolyn Jones and Anne Bancroft. She knew everybody. Blah blah blah. This guy goes, well, every Sunday night these people would come over, and he described the guy, some character actor in film, apparently well known. He goes, the woman, he goes, you may know her. Did you ever watch the Beverly Hillbillies? Well, Granny in the Beverly Hillbillies. I was like, what? I watched that all the way through my childhood. She never once said that one. I knew her pretty well.
That's an old friend of mine.
but all the other ones I heard all about.
Who cares
ones
about
I didn't
those?
Care. Yeah, exactly.
That's in the old days. You could just move from Wilshire District to Pasadena, and it was like a complete other life you could create.
You vanished. Yeah, you vanished. We don't even know to this day whether my dad even knew about it. Anyway, it's true.
He's gone. They're both gone.
She was tremendously emotionally abusive at times. Terrifically.
Isn't that
so.
You know what kills me is that the best people have these horrific stories, and then
you can either go either way with the bad stories.
Yeah,
you can go bad or you can go extra good. And going extra good, you suffer, and so you got to have therapy for that. Right, because codependency is you go into codependency. You start worrying about everybody else, keep them all together. You know, before you. Have
I mean,
any
you
of your
see
own
it,
feelings.
And you're in comedy. You see it in Belushi. You see it in this wanting to be liked and wanting to make everybody happy all the time. Right,
and
Robin Williams. Yeah. It's tragic, especially in comedy.
And we work in bars. You work in a bar at the worst time, like nighttime. Nothing good happens. And you're off the stage and you're all jacked up on adrenaline. Everybody loves you. And hey, time to go back to your hotel room and just be quiet now.
And you're there all weekend. I didn't know until the last couple of years that you work Thursday night. So you get in Wednesday.
No, boo-boo.
Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So you're by yourself usually.
Yes.
Right? From Wednesday to Sunday, doing 7 shows in 4 days.
Yep.
You got to drink. Well, you would have to have cocktails.
First of all, I don't do that schedule anymore. Once I had a kid, I was like, F yourself. Like, I'm going out for 48 hours maximum, you know, this many shows, and I'm home. But there was a point where I was in a hotel room drinking wine during the day and crocheting and crying.
Crocheting!
And I was like, I got to turn this around because I don't day drink. And I was like, this is not me.
No, I was just talking about the crocheting.
Yeah.
The drinking.
Yeah, the crocheting is the weird thing.
Really neat
the
hobby.
The drinking is the normal thing.
Right. I know. I don't know what happened with me in crochet.
Where did you learn crocheting? Hungarian.
No, I just decided I needed a hobby. I was reading about hobbies, and I thought, well, that's what balanced people do. They acquire hobbies.
You
should
have gone back to St. Thomas Aquinas. forget hobbies.
So stupid. But I don't do those weeks, but I eventually brought a dog on the road with me because I was so lonely and it was so horrible. Yeah, that's why a lot of comics fall into drugs and alcohol and partying.
When did you decide to be a comedian?
23. I'm 41 now.
So early, you're just, this is for me.
This is for me. But I knew I couldn't function in the real world. I just knew it. Like, when I graduated, I had 22 jobs in 4 years that I either got fired from or quit.
But if you
everything.
Would have followed the philosophy thing, you're teaching philosophy at a college isn't
a
job.
Oh, I tried that. I went to
grad school.
It
didn't work?
School.
You couldn't do it?
What'd you go to grad school in? What
philosophy.
What kind of philosophy?
Oh, it's just general. It was like for the masters.
I have a great podcast here. It's called Partially Examined Life.
I know those guys, Mark Lindenmeyer.
Okay,
yes,
all right.
Yes, hello.
I know them too. I had them on my podcast.
Yeah.
But you got to go on it. You got to go on the pod.
I know, but I have to read and
it's okay. They'll let you pick the stuff. I did it. And it was,
you did? What did
yes.
you do?
I did a couple of sort of papers on – there were psychological papers, but they sort of bordered on philosophical principles. The guy, Peter Fonagy, is a guy that has sort of operationalized the – encounter we have that creates attachment, and he has a very philosophical bent about agency and how that works. And I heard somewhere he studied philosophy. It just feels like a philosophy paper the way he writes his psychological papers. So yeah, you can pick whatever you want.
Interesting. He'll,
they have never done St. Thomas Aquinas. They've never done it.
It's so boring. She
I don't care. I already learned something just talking
you
to you.
Who? She won't so say boring. Who she likes.
I'm going.
Oh, I'll tell you.
Okay, who?
I like the existentialists. I
knew you did.
Which
Sartre,
one?
Sartre, but Jean Pascal.
He hates him. He
Camus.
Hates him.
You know
Camus.
Who? Let me turn you on to somebody else. If you like Sartre, Simone de Beauvoir.
Hello.
Okay.
I love her.
I met her. I met her.
You did
Oh,
not.
Yes, I did.
When,
I
in
met
1930?
Her. No, she was out here pitching Blood of Others for a TV show in the 80s.
Wait, Simone
de
Beauvoir
is, like, yeah. would have been 100 then.
No. Yeah, no. Sartre's girlfriend,
yes.
right?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
She was out here pitching a TV show. I had lunch with her. I had lunch with her at that weird what? Round restaurant, the Sunset Strip. I swear to God,
were you I believe you.
Using
I believe
back
he was,
That's
but
not.
I still believe him. But he's not prone to hyperbole. But
I just I'm like Zelig. I've been here forever, right? Ivan Moffat. I'll tell you. You want to hear old Hollywood stories? Ivan Moffat and John Frankenheimer. Are they both dead? I'm thinking.
I don't know who these people.
Okay, so I worked for their writer. Right, his name is John Arnoldy. He's still alive. I know that. So they were trying to take this pitch about the Blood of Others being a TV show.
Oh, my
but,
God.
So one day
– what a bummer
I'm
pitch.
I'm this little 21-year-old guy, like, getting meth and coke for the writer. That was my job. Anyways,
oh my God,
that's how I met Kathy Evelyn Smith, too, during the Belushi trial.
You need to write the big memoir.
So here's the deal. So they say, we're going to lunch, and I'm finally going to meet these great icons of Hollywood, right? And they go to this restaurant on Wilshire Boulevard called The Ball. Have you ever heard of
it?
No.
It's a high-class, like Musso and Frank's restaurant, and with all female, young female waitresses that are completely naked. And
what?
It's right on Wilshire Boulevard.
That doesn't exist.
I swear
Come on.
To
Not
God,
anymore.
This is in 1980.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I did. We had the Pussycat Theater in the 1980s. They used to show pornography in movie theaters.
I know. That's crazy.
Have you got to watch The Deuce? Where the
I heard you talking about that.
It is how that all came to be.
Pee-wee Herman would have never gotten in trouble if he was born a couple decades later.
I agree. Now that's such a minor transgression, and that's the place you should be doing what he was doing.
But there wouldn't have been those places. He just would have been at home.
That's true.
Very sad.
It's sad.
Paul's a – you know Paul?
I don't.
One of the most gracious, lovely humans you ever meet. But
existentialism.
So
how does that translate
so where
to parenting?
Hang on a second. Where does Heidegger fit into your whole thing?
Oh, I like Heidegger a lot.
Yeah.
What do you teach your children about?
Have you watched Bert Dreyfuss's series of? Okay, I'll get you.
No, but I like being in time. I like his idea of the meaning of being. The meaning of being is located in care, meaning what we lend our attention to, what we lend our care to. Here's what I like about existentialism. The fact that you can choose. The fact that you can choose a different course. You can create.
But Sartre took that to a weird.
Yes. I'm not saying it's all perfect.
Yeah.
But I think what I was looking for as a philosophy student was the self-help movement. Do you understand? I was looking for a way to live. And
I think existentialist is a great way to look at that. And Heraclitus. Go back a little bit, too.
The Greeks. They had it right, too. I think the Greeks had a good way, and then you know, we skirted up somewhere. Yeah. What's his name? Descartes ruined philosophy.
Yes, he did. Are we even here?
Like, yeah. Dude, come on. Don't stop screwing it up.
And then his, you know, his cogito was, you know, I think therefore I am. It should have been, I think therefore evolution creates matter that can think. what it should have been as opposed to I am.
Yeah.
So, all right, let's switch. We are tight on time, right? Or is that true?
Oh, we're good now.
What, can we go more than 8 o'clock?
All right.
Okay.
This is good.
Whoa.
Yeah, this is good.
Oh,
all right.
Starting. Usually in my jammies.
Okay,
by
so I have an assignment for you. I'm going to get you hooked up with Wes to do the show, which they love. They love doing people that have public lives and stuff. They love it.
Yes.
And Mark. And then we're going to get you turned on this Bert Dreyfuss series.
Okay.
On Heidegger. Okay. Don't let me forget.
What? Okay.
Now, what I want to get into with you guys.
Monsters.
What?
She asked what my book was called.
Oh, my God.
I have a book. I have a movie. I have a website.
Have you seen his movie?
What?
I'm
his
important.
Documentary about Bob?
I didn't know.
It's called Bob and the Monster, about his rock life.
I got to see that.
It's very good.
Facebook wants another book.
Another book about
They want a memoir. I saw him to both wars in the middle of it. It's
like... How many lives have you had?
I just talked the book. They mostly wanted rock and roll stories and Viper Room stories, so I just told those stories and they wrote it. It's a book, but I really should sit down and disciplinedly write a book. I will do that before I die.
Or we gotta do a docuseries.
Oh, it'd be fun.
Ooh, that's a good idea.
Screw that opiate stuff. Let's do something positive.
Yeah, no, I was going after Big Pharma. Do you know they're killing Americans?
I've heard you discuss this, yes.
We don't discuss, we fight.
I've heard your theories.
He thinks it's doctors. How weird is that?
Yeah.
I'm saying it's Big Pharma. You say it's doctors.
You're taking the agency away from doctors by landing it squarely at Big Pharma's lap.
At least I'm not my old commie self blaming the government.
I seem to have adopted that these days. So, yeah, I know it's weird.
Where do you put all your frustration with our culture towards your stand up and trying to enlighten people?
Trying.
Who are your heroes in comedy?
I'm afraid now, though. Honestly,
Do you get pushback?
The anti-vaxxer community is not very happy with me right now.
That was I felt so liberated.
Let me support you a little bit. A 3-year-old child died in Orange County this week who was not vaccinated from the flu.
The other parents need to see that happen.
Yes.
It's still behind the wall somewhere.
See, I
until
don't
they
look
see
at
it.
Social media, so I don't care. I just say the truth, and I'm sure there's a lot of people mad at me right now. But the fact that people don't vaccinate their children because a girl who didn't even graduate high school read something online from a lying non-doctor who then confessed he was lying and it still exists is madness.
Well, and I think the problem too is that everyone has a platform now. In 160 characters or less, you can put out whatever nonsense you think is truth, and then it gets picked up and retweeted, and now all of a sudden it's a crusade.
That expertise, no one understands what that is anymore.
What's an education?
Yeah,
what's a degree?
Right. It means nothing. Science is just another way of looking at things.
Alternative facts.
Yeah, it's really just very discouraging. That's why I was telling our kids. I said, just be an expert in something because I want you to understand what that feels like to be an expert. So you know when you talk to an expert what he or she has been through to get that expertise so you can – respect it and take it accordingly.
Yeah, and education. I think there's this mythology out there that anybody can drop out of high school and become an entrepreneur, millionaire, building an app. And it's like, okay, that's a small percentage of the human race.
That's 17 people.
By the way, it's
17.
Still not educated, though.
Correct.
It's still not.
Mm-mm. Yeah, and I'm a huge advocate of formal education, book learning.
So
just
we've learned
books.
Christina P is a snob. She's an educational snob. She's
total snob.
Elitist snob. We've learned that.
But
now.
You don't like college campuses. How do you reckon that?
They won't let me on. They won't.
All right, so who are your heroes of comedy?
Okay.
My hero of
Go
all
ahead.
Time
Go.
Life is Lenny Bruce.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
And I see things that he said in 1963 as being true still to this day, even more so. We have not progressed as a society.
One thing I will say.
We have not progressed. We have
one thing,
regressed.
Well, I'll give you, I rarely criticize you, but I'm going to criticize you right now. Bob sent me some Bob Dylan lyrics yesterday.
There.
And I saw – what you were talking about, but you were reading a lot into it. You were reading into it. Maybe the Lenny Bruce stuff, you're reading into some of the things he's saying.
Well, just the N-word. You can't even say it anymore. It gives it so much power. Then it can be possessed by other people. If you say it, you are condemned. It's a strange thing.
I know. And all you want to do is say it. You know what I mean, Bob? Can't we just all know?
And then you hear people say it in like an academic Tom Sawyer, for instance.
Yes, I know. It's context. It is right? Contextual.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
But he
and,
said
and this, we're Jim.
This giving power to words.
Correct.
And by suppressing people like what's going on now to thought, even
yes,
things
that was,
I disagree with.
That was
I don't
want
to suppress it. I want their stupid asses to say it over and over again so everybody can say, that dude's an idiot.
And Christine, I know we asked you who your favorite comedian is, but we're going to tell you ours. So mine is Pryor. Pryor is absolutely just a poet more than a comedian. Like the stuff.
Hands down,
like that philosopher, poet, comedian, all in one human
speak
being.
Speak of the N-word.
Genius.
Yeah, genius.
Yeah, speak. You said it, Bob, not me. Yeah. You get the tweets,
what are
not
your,
me.
What
bro.
Are your people?
Okay, so I love Bill Hicks. I think Bill Hicks was one of the greats. Bright died at 34, which was preposterous and crazy. I love Roseanne Barr, Janine Garofalo, Richard Pryor, Eddie Murphy.
I have a Roseanne story for you.
Oh, I love Roseanne.
I like Roseanne too. She, you know, she severe trauma stuff, right? And she, I was, you've done talk show stuff, right? You know how they groom you for the talk show. First, you do the prep, you do the pre-interview, and then that producer meets you, and you're in the makeup chair, and they're like, "What are you going to say with this? And what do you say then? What do you say then?" I'm like,
"So natural, just
yeah."
So
and I'm like, "I'm just going to say whatever. Don't relax." And she goes, "Oh, Roseanne, I can't wait to meet you." I was talking then about empowering women and things that I think are important. And this is now 15 years ago. What?
I'm hearing. Go ahead.
Okay. And 15 years ago, this is professional, right? Broadcasting. And I'm in the makeup chair, and this woman's like, "This woman cannot wait to this woman." Roseanne's all about empowering women. She loves your message about that. She can't wait to. So I go, "Good, all right, we'll have a nice conversation about it." So I walk out in the hall with this producer and the segment producer, and there's Roseanne. We meet each other in the hall, and I go, "Hey, nice to meet you. I understand you want to talk about this." I forget what I was saying specifically, and she goes, "Women, F women, F all women. They should be destroyed and killed. F all women." And I was like, "Ladies and gentlemen, this is my producer." Would you okay. And the producer's sitting there like, "That's Roseanne." So now fast forward. We have a nice – we had a good show. It was Carole and I. She's actually a really good talk show host, Roseanne, because you never knew where she was going. And at the end, we're up the stage and, you know, doing the Johnny Carson thing where you talk amongst yourself while the credits are rolling. And she came back to me. This is like 2 hours later. And she goes, "Hey, you know what I said to you in the hall?" She goes, "Let me tell you what that was talking about." She goes, "My mom knew I was being sexually abused, and she didn't do anything about it. And I don't think we should let women off the hook when they do things like that." So I was thinking about that at the time. I just wanted you to know. And I go, "Oh, okay."
Could have
clued me in, but it was funnier this way. So, you know, she had a purpose, and she stayed with her, and she explained it to me later. And I was always grateful that she explained it, and it was actually an important point.
Yes.
That I was letting – I forget what we were talking about, but somehow in that I was – overlooking some things that women need to be held accountable for.
That's interesting. Yeah. Well, I think it's very complicated in comedy and with women. And Phyllis Diller, I think, was the first to point it out. When a woman holds a microphone, this is what I like about Roseanne. When she wields power, you control a room. You're holding the phallus in your hand and you're telling everyone to suck it and you listen to me.
What's wrong with that?
Right. Which you, you think would be, it's coming into not being so taboo. I think the millennials are cooler with us.
Our daughter did a thesis on this, on Joan
really?
Rivers. And she said, she pointed out to me that, my daughter pointed out that Joan Rivers was the first attractive young female to stand up with a microphone that wasn't singing in front of a band.
Wow.
She said before that, when women were comedians, they had to have a character. They had to be a clown, right? They had to be Mom's Mabel. Phyllis Diller, Mom's Mabel. They had to have a character. They couldn't just be themselves trying to be funny. And then the fact that she made fun of herself was even more stunning.
The self-deprecation was key. And Phyllis Diller had a huge rack, by the way. She was a D-size.
And she never talked about it. She never showed anybody.
No. And in fact, she had dresses made to conceal those honkers.
Interesting.
The muumuus. And she had boots made that cut her leg at the ugliest point of her leg, is what she would say.
And she'd do the crazy hair.
Yeah. Which started from being on the road. She couldn't afford to have her hair professionally bleached. So she would do it in the sink and she fried her own hair. That's how the story goes. Then she wore wigs later.
I'm learning some words tonight. I've got to write this down. Honkers. Got it.
Flap wagons.
I met her when I was 11.
No kidding. Oh. Where?
She was at something that my dad, the Ford, she was a rep for, or she was the
representative.
Hired. Celebrity for Ford.
Oh, she was
Ford.
Entertaining the group there at the Ford Aerospace.
Yeah, or something.
Yeah, interesting.
I can't remember. I was only 11. I can't remember.
So let's continue.
But she was wild in person.
Continue to talk about this stuff that's bothering us today. My friend Leanne Tweeden at KBC Radio. She's in the morning show. I'm in the show that follows. Known Leanne for 20 years. She's a substantial person. And she came forward today with this report that Senator Al Franken had kissed
her.
He's
going down.
Forced her into stuck his tongue down her throat is what she said, and then took a picture pretending to massage her boobs, and then disturbed her and made her unhappy. And she did not think it was going to be that big a deal. She thought it was going to be like, well, there's more. We got to empower women. We got to keep this conversation going. But it's turned into this international event. She did. Jake Tapper interviewed her for 30 minutes today. I was watching it going, Jesus, is he ever going to stop? And I don't think – I know Leanne doesn't want Al Franken to lose his job. She absolutely categorically
he's
does not
going
want
to,
I think that's –
He's going down.
But that's the part that bothers me about all of this.
No, because Doug Jones is going to win Alabama. I believe the people of Alabama – here's an interesting thing about the Roy Moore thing. As long as people from Los Angeles, San Francisco, New York, Boston think everybody from Alabama is an idiot,
right.
You will have – the society you have.
Right.
Doug Jones also lives in Alabama. Doug Jones was born in Alabama. Doug Jones fought to bring to justice the killers of the four Alabama children who were killed in Birmingham, right? Mm-hmm. He lives there too. So when you're criticizing Alabama all the time, calling them rednecks and hip, you're just forgetting the good people of that region in the United States.
That is,
and we've got to stop doing that.
That is a mm-hmm. truth that prevails all sort of talking down to the citizenship.
Yeah, but
whether it's telling them how to think, how to act, how to talk, or telling them what they are or are not.
This is why we need a philosopher king, you guys. Absolutely. I mean, this democracy thing, it's not working out.
No, but don't you think so? Doug Jones is going to win. They're going to do their damnedest to get rid of a Democrat, right? Mm-hmm.
I don't know. You're right, politically, maybe.
I think he's gone.
But let's keep this conversation going. Where are we going with this sexual what are we calling it? The allegation? What, sexual
We're going to keep going
misconduct.
With it until it's somebody none of us can stomach, like Obama or some sacred person.
Well, they're starting to bring Clinton back to really look at what he did.
I remember that one.
What if it's Obama?
He did horrible stuff.
What happens then?
What if
in college Obama did something inappropriate?
Well, don't they say that – what was the first disillusionment of America? Was it Nixon? Was it Watergate? Was the first disillusionment that the American people had?
That was a big one. Vietnam was right there with it.
Yes.
So those are two big disillusioning experiences.
Yes. And I think that if it were to be an Obama, someone really, really beloved.
Revered.
Yes, we are in for some kind of massive psychic collapse.
I'm not.
Al Frank is not far off because he's thought of as, you know, a
it doesn't help that she's a conservative.
If she was a liberal, it would be different. Let me just wrap my head. What did he do? He took pictures for
she said they were on a USO tour. And he kept kind of doing inappropriate things with her. You know, he put a picture of the devil over her, where she, you know, it's silly stuff, but inappropriate, making her uncomfortable.
He's going to bring up the photo so you can
see. Yeah, may I see those?
What did you call breasts earlier? Because you're a female.
Honkers.
There's the
grabbing of the honkers.
She's asleep on a plane, and he took this picture while she was asleep.
Bob didn't bring up the honkers word. That was your word.
But that's not what bothered her. She didn't even know about this. But what bothered her was there was some skit they were doing, and they had to kiss on the skit. And Al Franken insisted they rehearse the kiss. She kept going, I'm not comfortable. And they agreed, okay, I'll tell you, you go right, I'll go left, we'll peck on the cheek. And they went, all right, I'll rehearse it. So she goes in for the peck. He grabs her head and sticks his tongue down her throat.
Yeah.
And she wasn't happy with that. And had to literally push him away with both hands, she said.
Yeah.
And he never apologized, and she's been around him a few times and, you know, let him know and know in certain terms she was mad at him about something.
Yeah.
And he didn't seem to get it.
So, oh boy!
Yeah, good times.
Well, then he was drawing pictures of her as a devil.
Yes,
on just the, to be funny.
Yes, he was doing funny. He was.
See, that's the problem with comics, man. Is that we're inappropriate for a living?
I know why being a comic's dangerous territory right about now.
Yeah, that's what worries me because I see the picture with Al Franken and the booby thing, and you're like, all right, like I can see. That could have been me, and fraternity. I would have been like, whatever, bunch of swinging dicks, so, you know, big deal.
Exactly.
That's I used to hanging out with these dudes, you know?
Yeah.
But the tongue down the throat is not cool.
But,
ever.
Well, this is what you're referring to, is something Susan and I have been talking a lot about lately, is how do you manage what men do and are, and how do you let them know where the boundary is? How do you manage that?
Well, I'll tell you. As I'm in a male field, I feel like there's just a force field of like, don't F with me.
So you put it out. That's what she said.
Some
women
are able to. You gotta be a hard ass.
We talked to Tawny Katane. She said she'd never been treated inappropriately.
Especially in the
workplace. Yeah. I mean, I've been privy to club owners that have invited me back to the jacuzzi with their wife because they're swingers. And even that was like, it was even kind of politely done. And I was like, no thanks. You know?
Do you think it's because.
When do they ever get somebody to go, God, yes!
But
oh, I've been waiting for this offer. Thank you.
Well, that's what's so weird about the stuff that men pull. That somebody must reinforce it somewhere. Otherwise, they wouldn't keep doing it. But
it's worked.
Who liked Weinstein's maneuver? I don't know. But I'm just saying.
When they knocked down his hotel room door and he was naked with his robe open, went, finally.
Yes. Well, here's what I always wonder with these Weinsteins and the Cosbys of the world. The wives don't know? How do the wives not? Is it just
the guy in Penn State's wife claims she didn't know.
How would you not? How would if you knew? You would know instinctively. She would know. You would too, right?
Are you kidding me? I know what I'm like the FBI, CIA. Yeah. I know what he's doing all the time. Yeah. Where are you going? What are you doing? When are you coming back? You know, what's the code to your phone? Don't worry. I know it already. I'm in there. I know everything he's doing.
Yeah.
He farts. I know what he had for lunch. So I don't know how you're not on top of your husband, right? Yeah.
Well,
oh my goodness, that didn't come out right.
No, that's right. Know what I mean. But go ahead. So
eyes almost, on, bro.
I almost think that they're so well off. They're kind of like they're afraid to lose their job too.
What do you mean?
If they call out their husband,
oh.
I mean, all these women are always afraid to lose their job, or they don't want to
lose their job as wife, or have the husband lose his job.
Are worried about. How
status is how what you're saying. Yeah.
How it's going to result if they call this guy out?
Well, here's what I'm wondering. Now,
people who have husbands are like that too, and they stay with them anyways.
Yeah, why?
It's
for the
business.
Handbags for
yeah,
free stuff.
Pretty much, or every year they make another $50 million. You know, you're another $50 million.
But if you divorce, don't you get half of that?
I know it's
and then
California.
You don't have to deal with
that's
the guy?
What I always
you
say.
Do, but there might be another 100 next year.
Yeah, but you're still you can
how
make
much
it,
money?
Yeah,
is
how
enough?
Much do you need?
It's ew.
How much do you need?
Why is that not you to you? It's ew.
No, that's what I think.
I'm with Christina.
I'm not saying
it's ew. But Bismay, do you think?
You.
Do you think that some women are hungry for attention? I'm not being pejorative about this because if I take the three of you, Susan, Christina, and Tawny, you guys don't need. You're not asking for it. You could take it or leave it. I'm sure you like it if somebody says you look nice or whatever, but you don't have any need for it.
Right, right.
Some women need a little bit of.
I want to be taken seriously.
Okay.
I don't want to be like objectified at
all right,
work.
So that's what
I
is that,
absolutely
that same,
refuse.
Absolutely. Yeah. There is a force field of
I talked to some people on the radio that were like, I like that for men. I like that attention. I need that. And I was like, well, then it's going to start coming in ways that you don't want.
Yes.
Right? If you even allow a tiny bit
I like
in.
I like that attention, but in the workplace, it's just no way, Jose. No, I mean, I like to be attractive to men, but I just don't. In the workplace, if it ever happened to me, I would just shut it down.
Yeah, but in the workplace for you is a sort of a nefarious environment. It's a bar.
But I've always been one of the boys in a way. I'm sure I'm not truly, but I've always. That's been always my approach. And I also dress like a dude. I don't know. I just don't court the energy. And I think you had this discussion with Tawny Katane when she was on here.
Yep.
About her. She talked about having her breasts reduced and not to say that you
She, no, she did. Sound she like she said she put them on for the rock
out
of
attention. You're scared of something. You're scared of just saying what you think. I know. Why we can't all live in fear of saying what we think.
Why? Jeez, I know. But that is a thing of like, because, okay, look, let's look at the rehab.
We're afraid of a bunch of people with a phone going, I don't like that. I don't like that.
But let's look at celebrity rehab or when you usually have these girls that are in porn.
Yeah.
What do? You make them wipe the makeup off. That's number one. Strip it down so
that call them by their name. Call them by their real name.
And why is that?
Because this front they put on is not real. It's a false front. We found that that's one thing I learned about celebrities. They often have a fake name. They're not using their real names ever. And they all have that.
Swifty? Remember Swifty?
But what also doesn't that court a certain type of man?
Oh, sure.
Doesn't it court certain type of behavior out in the world? Societal,
whether they want it or not, and you can argue about trying to adjust the male response, but they're cues that people respond to.
Right. But then again, there are girls who don't do that stuff and they get assaulted.
Of course. Listen, we're not saying always or never, and we're not judging either. Yeah. We're not saying you should or shouldn't. They can do whatever they want. But
we're obviously going through something, and everybody's trying to figure it out.
Yeah, I am too. I kind of like I'm reserving judgment on this because I'm like something's doing,
and it's good. It's not bad. It's good. I mean, it's a reordering in a positive way. It's just where is that place? Where are we going? I'd like to be a part of.
Don't assault women.
Yeah, well, that's an easy
one.
Keep
it in your pants.
Well, but Al Franken, was that an assault?
Well, he wanted to rehearse the kiss over and over again, and she was like, "I don't know why you want to do it." And he was insisting. He was like desperate to do it, and that's sort of an assault.
Okay.
When somebody shoves their tongue in your mouth like that, it is an assault.
Yeah, that's just
especially
gross.
When you're doing a shtick thing with a kiss, and the girl's supposed to blush. Being that girl is never fun.
Susan's not a tongue kisser.
I've had that part.
Yeah,
I've never been assaulted. I've had to play the part, but I never was assaulted because I guess I put off that vibe.
Well, Drew, would you ever insist on practicing the kiss? Neither would you, right? Because you guys are decent dudes and you know the difference between appropriate and inappropriate.
Yes,
and,
I think so.
And now we're
I
having
so.
To say
I, that. But we also have a new generation of men that are scared, and I'd like them to have real specific guidelines. So they can know exactly where they're getting. Millennials are hearing this. They get it. They're just now they're like, well, what the hell?
Right.
What do we do? Not do? How do we,
That's the next TV show, Millennial Sex Ed, guys.
Ooh.
You got to bring back Love Line. You got to do Love Line again.
Well, we're going to be so busy with this sex molester show.
Sexual assault rehab. No, but you said something interesting that it's power.
Celebrity. Rehab. Hey, yeah. Celebrity.
You got to do celebrities, not regular people.
Power control.
Because celebrities are not like us, bro.
Power control.
Yeah,
control.
So what
humiliation
is
rehab.
So what's going on? What's power? What is that about?
About little boys being humiliated by mom and crushed. Their little souls being crushed.
The serial killer, right?
Yeah.
It's always a mom.
Do you watch The Mindhunter?
My husband does. I'm terrified. I can't.
Oh, so good. It's so good.
Stop it, you guys. I can't do murders and serial. But so like Harvey Weinstein's mother humiliates him, tortures him, and then he takes it out on women.
Then he feels small and humiliated and worthless. So he has to go into the world and build himself up to something gigantic so he can keep himself buttressed against that small feeling. And then when it comes to sex and sexuality, out comes those primitive feelings and activities. And so he's humiliating, he's aggressing against, he's showing his power. And it becomes – for the average, heterosexual male, it's like, why is that even – that's not
– Yeah, what are you doing, bro?
That's not sexual. It's like, what is that?
It's weird.
It's weird. Like the plant.
I think he was a weird-looking guy, and he couldn't get what he wanted.
Well, there's that –
his wife is beautiful, so
– Right. I mean
– Okay, so then that brings us to a whole other rabbit's hole, which is
– Yeah.
Okay, let's say Melania Trump, right? Why does she marry an – older, overweight, kind of not
spray
the brightest
tan.
Guy,
Rachel,
spray tanned, weird guy. Why?
Handbags.
Why is that not open for criticism in our society?
Oh, it is.
No, you can't. If I tried to,
I think it's revolting.
Do you think it's open for criticism?
Yeah, no, I don't think so.
Oh, you're attacking a woman. You can't criticize her.
Oh, I see.
You can't criticize her for marrying him.
Here's why you can't. Because it's an exchange. Sex is also a form of exchange, right? It's the first institution that ever was. It's a business model. I stay hot. I stay fuckable. I still fuck you. Oh, sorry.
We're on Facebook Live. Two children just lost their minds.
Comedians. God, comedians.
Potty mouth. But that's the exchange. So it's actually a form of contract. I was in law school for 2 weeks, and I remember in contract class.
Was there any other professional or graduate school you didn't go to?
I've tried it all. My life is, yeah.
No, but
it's a form of contract.
No, I'm just interested in cultural norms. Why is it that you can't criticize the model who marries the old billionaire?
Because the feminist movement now will call that empowerment. They will say, oh, but you're so sexually liberated that you're using your body to benefit you. That's the Madonna phenomenon.
Yeah.
It's, in my opinion, kind of a false sense of power. If you want to get real power, let's get in the White House. Let's start making the money. You know, I feel liberated doing porn. Why don't you own the company that makes the porn? That to me is the real, that's the power move, you know, but whatever. That's just,
well,
the existential, the other
kinds of co-opting power that you're talking about, like being a porn star.
That's the phrase, it's
also essentially the Stockholm syndrome. Uh-huh. It's also something that people enslaved would do. They'd identify with their captors and they would adopt all their stuff and say they were good to them and all this kind of business.
So you think Melania is Stockholm?
Of sorts. Could be. I don't know them, but who knows?
Yeah. Okay, here's another thing. Do you think African-American comedians can get away with things that white comedians can't? Because we were on the Bert podcast.
Bert Kreischer.
Yeah. And he was going off about it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. If I'm a woman can say things men can't say, a black comedian can say what they want to say. Yes. Whoever's marginalized in society wields the mouth power. That's
okay. So the power that's going after these white powerful men, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't veer off going towards language that's used by other people, right?
I didn't get that.
The idea that I think, just for instance, Chris Rock can say things that no one else can say.
Yes.
That's a fact. Mm-hmm. Why?
Because he's marginalized in society. You can punch up, you can't punch down in comedy. That's just the rule.
Or even across. Maybe across.
You can do lateral. I can.
You just came at Bert Kreischer and just nailed him.
Who? Never heard of that guy. He's not very famous. Where's his Netflix? I don't know. Bert Kreischer.
So if Bart you were, Kreischer. During the election, if you were to criticize Hillary Clinton, what would have happened?
I'm allowed to. She's a white lady. No, you can go lateral.
You can?
You can punch laterally.
Saying, I don't know.
I can crap on celebrities. White blonde girls.
I look like Melania, so I can say whatever I want. She's pretty. Here, somebody asked her if she bleaches her butthole.
Oh,
somebody asked her that?
And then she said, no, but my husband uses a spray tan. I was like, wow.
Christina, whoa. Why did you ask her that?
President's wife. This is the president.
Who asked
of the
her
United
that?
It was in, I. You know how your phone like, you know, pops up and stuff comes up?
I think it's The Onion said this. It's The Onion, Susan. I think you better take a look at who said that. That is the funniest.
I can say that because I am a white woman.
Who looks like Melania. But, yeah. but The Onion can say that because they're The Onion.
The point I'm trying to make is I was critical of Hillary Clinton, and some friends of mine, female friends of mine, wanted me dead.
Yes.
Right?
What? Yeah. What?
Well, that's unreasonable, Bob.
No, but how can we survive like this?
Until stuff equals out a bit more. So here's what I think what's going on in society is the equalizing of things. So you forget the women's movement is fairly new, as is civil rights. We're only talking about, what, the 1960s? When could women vote, Drew? When did this happen?
28. Was it that late?
I think.
So it's like, yeah, when you look at the grand scheme of things, we haven't really gone so far. We're going far in a very short time because of technology. So this is like the pendulum is kind of, it's going to go all over the place because of the internet.
And nothing, I'm going to tell you something, nothing affects our social historical sort of phenomenology, to use your...
I like that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Heidegger.
To use your, start with Hegel.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Ms. Philosopher.
German.
That nothing affects the phenomenology of the human more than biological change. Mm-hmm. And when we developed antibiotics, and people didn't need to die of STDs until AIDS came around to challenge that a little bit, and developed birth control that sort of unmoored us from a biology that we'd been with the entirety of human evolution.
Right.
Of course things are going to change. Of course they're going to change. So that's just the male-female piece that's changing. And plus now we're in mixing in different ways, and the cultures are coming in different ways and communicating in different ways. Going to change things. It's got to have rather fierce consequences, it seems to me.
That's a really astute observation, man. Mm-hmm. That was great.
See, I think the antibiotics are the big one, and people don't really realize that.
Yes, because you died, what, in the medieval period at 35?
You died from everything. You died if you got a urinary tract infection. You did.
Right. UTIs were deadly.
That's bananas.
Yeah, you die of skin infections, everyone, gone, staph, death,
dead by
sepsis.
Now.
Yeah, you'd be long
yes,
gone.
Yes, long.
STDs, you'd be, forget that. You get,
especially.
You know, this one.
See, they didn't have the chance to die of cancer for many centuries.
Yeah.
But now we have cancer.
And by the way, the new model.
And when we cure that, oh my God.
Well, the new model, we're getting close. Let me tell you something. Cancer is an exciting place to be right now. I'm in a lot of research with the Prostate Cancer Foundation.
And listen to that sentence. Cancer is an exciting really place fun. To be right
it
now.
It is. Yeah, it's going to be. The treatments are going to be very much like infectious disease, the way we go about, it's not the fact that just immunotherapy. It's the way we attack the tumor is going to be very similar to the way we attack bacteria. It's very interesting.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it doesn't seem very efficient.
So then
now.
What will people die of other than guns and suicide?
Well, they will die of
drugs.
Aging.
Drugs.
They will die of age, and people don't seem to understand what that is.
You know what you said many years ago on Loveline? Whenever you go, you know what? People seem to forget that we are biological beings who break down.
They can't stand that. They just forget even the breakdown part. We are biological.
That's right.
What we are. We're biological beings. And that has real implications.
Tell about the cell thing. At a cellular level, something kicks on.
When?
At 72 or 76 or 78, you said. You said something like that one time. And you're aging and you're just going off a cliff. Like it accelerates.
Well, it does accelerate. It's a good old. Yeah. No, you know what I said? I said men. Yeah.
That's the only ones I'm concerned about. When it comes to death. Yeah.
No, what I told them
was
you're
going to live to be like 103.
I don't want to. What for? What's the point?
The men, the wheels come off the wagon during their 70s.
Is that right?
Yeah, generally speaking. But if they make it through, they're usually pretty good. They're usually pretty good for several years.
That's when your body breaks
down. Just stuff starts happening. Just stuff starts going on.
70s.
Things start. Susan's like, we got to travel before that.
You're going to be waiting for him in the walker.
A couple decades to go here. I got to work on this.
Wait, what happened? I mean, you're just talking like cancer.
You said something turns on at a cellular level.
No, it's not that. No. It's not. It's just that's what seems. That's been my observation.
Women were later.
Women, it's
keep on
it's much less.
My Auntie Abby lived to be 96. She was deaf and blind, but she was still going.
Women, it's much more of a slope, a steady slope through the 80s. While men, it's like boom, boom, boom. And then they're like, okay, all right, made it. And then they can kind of come out of it a little bit too.
I never want to lose my husband. We're so such here's, a bonded
do
pair.
Do you think about death a lot? Because I
do. Yeah, obsessed
I
about it. Let's talk about
too.
Death. I love
so,
it.
So my Uncle Jerry.
What time do we have to abandon this show? We good? All right.
My Uncle Jerry ironically came to a book signing I had, and I hadn't seen him in about 15 years, and he was in his 90s. And I said, you know, Uncle Jerry, you ever think about how you lived? Like all his brothers died at 58, 62, 61, 64. And I was like, how is it you live thus long? Because I'm concerned about the genetics. Like, how long does a forest live, right? And he goes, never smoked, never drank.
Oh, well.
Never smoked, never drank. Well, I'm going, never smoked, never drank since...
But you've got, like,
1996.
Cockroach. But you and I, too, the Eastern Blocker stuff, we got cockroach DNA.
But I got the Ashkenazi Jew garbage.
Oh, that's terrible.
That's bad stuff.
Yeah, I've
that's
heard
bad
about
stuff.
That. Mm-hmm. What about you, Susan? How's your DNA?
Oh, 100. Her dad lived to be 100.
Yeah.
100.
My butthole when I'm 90. I'll be on that cruise ship around the world.
It's fantastic.
I'll be that hot 90-year-old like, come on, baby. Sexually harass me. Bring it.
No, this Facebook's really going to love it.
What's going on Facebook? Do they have any questions for us or comments or anything? You're monitoring, huh?
They want to know who Burnt Chrysler was.
Burnt Chrysler?
Burnt Chrysler.
Oh, the fattest working comedian known to man.
We don't know who he is. None of us do.
Oh, I've never heard of him either.
I lost my page. Sorry.
Now, he went through Sober October.
Yes, he did.
He told me he was going to drive me onto Rogan's show and then magically didn't. I don't know what the deal was.
Well, we'll talk later. We'll figure something out.
Yes, please. Thank you.
Yeah, he did it. I'm very surprised.
I was not. I coached him up at the very beginning. He was in a panic. Yeah. And he called me like, am I going to be okay? I have to fly? Like, Bert, you're going
to
be fine.
I've always found it's really easy to stay sober for short periods of time.
Yeah.
It's long periods of time that are very difficult.
So if it were a 90-day challenge.
As long as you know, like I would say a year. If you guys really want to F with him, say put some real money down though. Everybody's going to have to pitch in, get 100 grand out there in front of him. 100 grand. Don't drink or take drugs for a year. He cannot do that, I guarantee you.
Bert's a binge user, though.
A year is a long time, Drew.
So, Drew, what? Yeah, you think it's binge party guy? It's the
binge alcoholic, frat. And they're easier. They're harder to nail down. They're a little slippier because they can control it for long periods of time.
Not a year.
Maybe not. I've never tried that with bribing a binge alcoholic. Be interesting.
Does bribery work for sobriety?
Yeah. Oh, sure. Yeah. It motivates.
All kinds of motivators work.
Yeah.
I had no idea. I thought you had to be motivated from this, within to change. You know,
no, it doesn't matter where it starts.
You have celebrity rehab, right?
Yeah.
So I had the aftercare the last three seasons. I had the aftercare, right? And these people were obsessed with their last check, right?
I'm sure it's a fortune.
They were compensated.
Some of them were paid
so
well.
I kept telling some of the not brightest ones that you weren't going to get your check unless you stayed sober.
That's brilliant. That's brilliant. You guys should have done that the whole time.
I was like, and so one of them did use drugs and got arrested. I said, dude, you're not going to get your last check. And he's like, no. Are you kidding? I'm going to get a lawyer.
Good luck. Wait, how much do you think lawyers cost, dum-dum? Yeah, there goes your paycheck.
So anyways, I think you can. Certainly those at home that have loved one that's suffering and causing you suffering, you can motivate them by your giving them a bottom line. You know, it's pain and suffering that motivates people in the right direction. Sometimes bribery works, right? What is freedom? Here's the thing. I got sober because a judge told me if I didn't stay sober, I was going to prison.
That's a good motivator.
Freedom was bribery. I didn't think in terms of like going to prison because it's hard when that's hanging over your head for 3 years, right? You can't think about prison and what might happen there to a little guy like me, right? But you can think about freedom. Like my sobriety started to be about freedom right off the bat. Like I remain free. I can do what I want as long as I stay sober.
Dude, be what I want to be. Like, hi. That Peter Fonda speech.
Because they'll take you into custody like that back in the day, but nowadays they don't.
Prison's where they find all the drugs, right? Isn't that where the best drugs are nowadays?
Yeah, it's also where people find God a lot.
Ooh.
God's there. Sobriety's there.
Cool. Yeah. It works, right?
Whatever works. That's exactly right.
It's crazy.
So I have a friend named Mary Loynes who went to school with you.
I love her.
She said, did Christina discuss her feminine lessons from our older Irish nun high school teachers? She is brilliant.
I know that about her. I picked that up immediately.
Brilliant people.
You hide it. You hide it a little bit.
Well,
Christina, you do.
Do I?
Yes.
Are we making you uncomfortable?
A little bit.
I hope so.
I'm either misunderstood the question or you had feminist women's studies in Catholic school?
Negative. No, we had feminist teachers. We had wonderful teachers at this all-girls school I went to.
Oh, that weren't nuns.
Yeah, you had civilians that taught and there were nuns who taught. And they taught us horrible things about sex ed. Like when this nun said it was when a man gets cold.
Blue balls.
Yeah, and then we were like,
well, that's true.
That's not what it's referring to.
Yeah, silly. No. So silly.
They taught you that in high school?
Yeah, sex ed in like 10th grade, which is way too late. I mean, by 10th grade.
When did you graduate high school?
94.
So that was the AIDS epidemic time.
Heck yeah.
Yeah, and they weren't giving you real info?
Dude, AIDS ruined my college experience. Like, I would have been getting it in a lot more had it not been for the AIDS terror that was rained on us.
Was it as bad in England, too?
I didn't hook up. No, I did. I hooked up with Americans. No, they're way less hysterical.
Okay,
yeah, way less hysterical.
Every time I hear Oxford, I think of two things. Bill Clinton, now you, and Tom York.
Oh, and I used to see him walking around.
Did you really?
This is right when Radiohead was like...
Radiohead's from Oxford.
Yes.
Did you know that?
Wow.
And we used to see him walking around, going to
pubs and gigs.
With the eye. Yeah. It was cool. Super cool.
Did you go see them when they were there?
My friend did. At the time, I didn't even know who they were. And someone was like, dude, that's Radiohead right there. And I was like, what? Who? And then later, I put it together.
You should lie now and say you saw them in a little club there.
Yeah, I'm so cool. I'm not that cool. I'm not that cool.
What's that?
What you got, Susan?
Miss Producer, you're saying wrap it up?
Wrap it up.
Is what you're saying?
Wrap it up. Mama's got to go to bed.
All right, wrap it up. Christina, it is a privilege. I hope we'll
great to meet you.
You guys are my favorite, and this has been the best.
What's that?
You have a million plugs.
I know. I'm going to give all the plugs to relax here.
Hydrolite?
Hydrolite. Yeah, we should all go out to dinner sometime with the Kreischers and everybody. Bob, come on now.
The last house?
To the valley? I don't know.
No, we're going to meet midway somewhere.
If you guys want to keep talking about something else, you may, but he has to talk about
go.
All right, then I do my plugs. Oh, that's what she was mad at. She was the plugs, the plugs.
The plugs.
The plugs.
The plugs.
Okay, so
the last house.
We have The Last House, which we think is a pretty cool sober living here in Los Angeles, and you can check out the interview we do with the director there. Also, our friends at Hydrolite, the effervescent tablets that tell you can replace an IV fluid repletion. So those of you that are – yes.
That's cool.
Yes, I envisioned that a long time ago, and now here it is.
I'm thinking this is going to keep me alive.
Don't forget, me and Mike Cather, we're going to be at the Ice House December 5th with Emily Morris joining us. Yes, doing a live podcast there. Check out the Dr. Drew podcast, the Adam and Drew podcast, the Weekly Infusion with Dr. Bruce, the Thing with Mike, KBC 790 podcast, the Midday Live KBC show, which is the same radio station that Leanne Tweeden, now everyone knows, is on.
I imagine there'll be some news cameras down there tomorrow.
Today they actually took a conference room and turned it into a press conference. Every news outlet on earth was there. Yeah. I mean, everybody.
Think he's not going down?
It's a brave thing to do.
And Bob's podcast, Don't Die.
Don't Die podcast.
Well,
just go to rehabbob.com.
Rehabbob.com. Go.
Don't
I never
die.
Promote my.
Bob,
well, no, I'm
nothing positive ever. Just don't die. How about live?
You live. That's what we call our podcast.
Yes, I know.
You live.
This life positive. And don't die. Those are my two podcasts.
Go to doctor.com, support us. It's the holidays. We could use some help with these podcasts. Click through on the Amazon banner there. And
you have to listen to the podcast. Just subscribing doesn't work anymore. You have to actually listen, or at least listen to a minute.
Yes. Well, or just push on and don't have the volume on.
Yeah, when you're in the shower, just push the on button. Christina Netflix special, I cannot recommend it strongly enough. It's called Mother Inferior. It is funny. You'll see why I said immediately we must have her in here. Her Twitter handle is at Christina P.
You also said she's going to be really huge one day.
Did I say that? I can see that.
To the top.
Guys.
Yeah, I was like, this one.
Don't blow it. Don't blow it with some sexual harassment thing once you're up there.
I'm so not fun. I'm the least fun of anybody.
I have a feeling the wind's going to blow the other way, and it's going to be women. She grabbed me.
That would be equal, wouldn't it? If we started going after.
Yeah, go
there
do
you
it.
Go.
I'll serve myself
that's
up.
True.
You could do it.
Your mom's podcast. Your mom's house podcast.com.
Commandeered to be sexually harassed.
Yeah, it's fine.
Anytime. At our age, we'll take it.
That's Deep Bro Podcast, is the other one you should
going
see.
Going on that cruise.
check out. There's some guy named Bert Kreischer that I think Christina and Tom know.
Not very popular.
He's really an unpopular dude. He's big.
He's fat.
He's fat.
How fat was he when you guys saw him last?
He was sitting down. But then he did that video with him coming out of the pool in a Speedo, and I was like,
disgusting,
dude. Yeah. Pool looked good though. The new pool they put in the backyard is nice.
Yeah.
You never had any English boyfriends there when you were there?
You know what, man?
They love Speedos, English guys.
They were just kind of like, they didn't have any game. You know what I'm saying? Like, they didn't want to talk to American girls. They didn't know
really?
How to spit game. They were kind of lame.
They didn't wear Speedos, right? In summer?
I don't like Speedos.
I know. It's gross.
My dad
Somebody
wears
wants to know if you're going to Maui with Tommy.
I am.
She
I'm
is.
Not performing.
Tom's going to Maui?
Whoop, whoop.
Nice. Where
in
you
December.
Staying? Nice. How fun.
I'm going to tell you where we're staying.
Okay. Well,
the internet.
Yeah,
I'll
right.
tell you later.
You're right. You're right. Yes, of course. I forget this thing. Other people like to listen. I had a bunch of emails, you guys, but we were too interested in talking to Christina and talking about what's going on in the world. Yeah, we will try to get to them, I promise.
That was just in case you
don't die to those people whose lives might have depended on that email. Don't die until next podcast.
Here's one, though.
Horrible title, Bob. We need to work on that.
Support from my friends here. Dr. Love Your Stuff, but how can you still work with that Corolla character who's been such a full-blown functioning alcoholic? Can't you say, I can't be with you anymore if you choose to live like this? Thanks, man.
Oh, yeah, sure. Well, I'll just do that.
I don't think... Adam's
He'd have to leave
Adam's
me, too.
Adam's not an alcoholic.
No,
he would never lose control enough to be an alcoholic.
Yeah. That's how I'm like, I have control stuff, too.
Yeah.
And that's why I never became.
Couldn't go.
Isn't that
I don't have
question?
Fun.
That's why
no
I don't,
fun.
I, that's why I never liked pot. pot makes you feel like I don't know when it's going to wear off.
Isn't what?
But there, what do you think?
How do you know when heroin's going to wear off?
I know. Well, you can counter heroin with cocaine.
Okay. Oh, my God. Who does that to themselves?
When I read a question like that, I only printed it out because I want to know what you think of that question. Like, if somebody says, how can you work with somebody like that? And
it's work.
Like, or,
it's not marriage.
You're talking about Adam?
Yeah.
How can I work with Adam?
Are you taking – it's like being sexually harassed. How can you why do you do that? Is it that bad?
No, it's not that bad. Yeah. We've had moments over the years where it's gotten a little bit like you got to be kidding, like really. But for the most part, we're friends for a long time, 20 years. We've had rocky and lofty peaks and valleys in our relationship. And generally, we shake hands and we're friends, no matter what.
And some of it's kind of a shtick, too.
And some of it's doing radio. I understand he's got a job to do.
But when I see those questions, I'm always like, who asked that? Like, they're just stirring shit, really.
Well, look at my Twitter feed sometimes.
No, but yeah, why I think they're doing it is they're comparing work to marriage. We're talking about your children are in a house with a using addict or a alcoholic. That's different. You as a spouse have to do something.
Yeah.
But when you can just go to work and do your job and get out of there if somebody's got a drinking problem.
Well, yeah, every comedian a lot. That's what I was going to say.
Like, yeah. Close up the comedy shops if we can.
Drew surrounds himself with alcoholics. He doesn't have a problem with them personally. He just, he just has to deal with their...
Some drink, some don't.
That's right.
Right?
He's a good guy.
Codependent. Boundaries. Set your boundaries.
That's what I'm saying.
You don't want to let him in. You don't want to let him in, man.
No, I let him in the thing about codependency really is it mobilizes your shit.
Yeah.
But you think it's theirs. You understand?
Man, we got to talk about this next time. Let's do a whole episode on codependency.
All right.
Well, I don't like calling it codependency because they don't like
misnomer.
That word, right?
Right.
It's people who live... Who think their feelings come from other people?
Oh God!
Yes, yes.
That's what it is.
That's what it is.
Yeah, right.
Wait.
Now somebody said Adam's not as bad as Mike is.
Well, I was going to say Mike can get pretty bad too, and Mike's
sober.
He's very sober, but he will say, "I'm doing this for radio. I'm doing this for a fact." He's very explicit about it.
Right.
Adam does not say that, but he just says, "You're a pussy and an asshole to me that I am." So that's why he does it. So.
That's why we love him.
Yes, we do indeed. All right, thank you very much for
see you later,
and Christina.
Alligator.
We'll do a codependency one coming up. So thanks
love
for being here. All right,
thank
see you
so
time.
Much.
Now, there are a lot of factors that lead to recovery, and particularly success in recovery. But programs that challenge patients, that don't gratify them, that often is the most effective. And that's what we like about Last House Sober Living in Los Angeles. Last House, structured program based on accountability and your actions, living a certain kind of life. Not like those luxury treatment centers that kind of feed the narcissism, entitlement, and selfishness. Last House works to combat the learned helplessness some of these millennials have. Also, device dependency. A lot of places shrink from that one. And the codependent family system that needs a lot of help. Community challenges addicts with disciplinary systems that teaches them consequences for their choices and actions. The program isn't easy. In fact, it's quite difficult. It's supposed to be difficult. It's hard work to recover. Their theory is, much like diamonds, recovered addicts are forged under pressure. If you or a loved one is looking for a program that aligns with so many of the characteristics we believe lead to a successful recovery, please have a look at Last House. Learn more, visit thelasthouse.net. Again, that is thelasthouse.net. Visit them today. All right, it is fall and your immune system is about to get tested, everybody. Not only does the changing weather mark the start of cold and flu season, it's also back to school time when kids become walking petri dishes. While catching something may be inevitable, there is no excuse for letting yourself get dehydrated in the process. So when you're wiped out with cold or flu, the first piece of advice, always to drink plenty of fluids, but we seem to forget that. Now, once you've started feeling dehydrated, it's already too late for water or sports drinks. Rapid rehydration requires the proper balance of sodium, glucose, and water, and nothing gives this like Hydralyte. Hydralyte's formulation is based on established, proven science, and it is the simply best rehydration product I've found in this country. Hydralyte comes in great flavors, orange, berry, lemonade, and it's available in a pre-mixed drink, a powder, or what I prefer, those effervescence tablets. You just drop in a glass of water or a bottle of water, off you go. It's like your own portable IV, but you can do it enterally. Compared to sports drinks, Hydralyte delivers up to 4 times the electrolytes with 75% less sugar.
Hydrolite solutions are appropriate for all ages, and each bottle or package includes easy-to-use, easy-to-follow instructions. You can find Hydrolite at Rite Aid or online at Amazon.com. And for a limited time, our listeners can save 30% on Hydrolite. Just click the banner on our site, drdrew.com, 30% off. Great deal. Do it.
Remember, you can find all these podcasts at drdrew.com. The Dr. Drew podcast, the This Life podcast, and the Adam and Drew podcast, which is available 5 days a week. Find them all on iTunes and rate us 5 stars. Subscribe and get it first. And if you're really happy, click on the Amazon banner at drdrew.com to help support the show. We'll thank you for it. If you join the email list via drdrew.com/contact, we'll send you a weekly infusion newsletter with Dr. Drew's news. We're so grateful when you get in touch. We read all your emails and we'll bring you the subject matter you want to hear about.
You live.